Okay, we're back. Remember, we're just going to do a little bit on the GI. Whoops. Okay, so let's see. Now, on the Echo, we're back. Remember, we're just going to compare, do a little bit of the GI system, and then put that up on there as two, so we can have this ready for the quiz. If I get through some of this, then that means Tuesday we just kind of finish this up and do a little bit of wrap-up, maybe start some review, and then Thursday next week we have it all for you to review. GI, the main points, just kind of think about it on a comparative aspect. How do you get, you know, nutrients into the body? You know, we're eating them through our mouth, right? Other animals might filter feed, such as this very simple type of sponge, right? Filter feeding the ocean, fluid goes through, it gets trapped, and then it can be digested and used. Some animals filter feed from the water and can trap it. You might think of small animals doing this, but actually very big animals can do this too, like the baleen whale. The baleen is this like filter, right? So they can catch krill, a little crustacean, and they're basically not eating big animals. They're eating small animals, but many of them, right? And they can filter feed from the sea and catch the krill. This is a big problem because the krill die, then if there's not enough krill, these big animals can't survive. All right, and then you end up with these nasty insects that can suck blood out of you, right? Penetrate your skin and take fluid, but very quickly get the nutrients out of the blood and then poop out the excess that they don't want. What's really amazing to think about these vampire bats, right, that are in South America, they can land on cattle, they bite them between their shoulder blades, and then they lap up all that blood. They don't just suck it up. It's not like a vacuum. But they lap it up. And then they're so heavy they can't even fly because they're so full of the blood. And their teeth are sharp so the cattle don't really feel it. So they're bleeding. So they lap up this blood. And then they're so heavy they really can't fly. So they actually have to have a very fast renal function. They actually pee, get rid of the excess water. So it's like a double insult to the cow. First I stole the blood, then I pee on you, and then I can take off. That's pretty amazing. But to think about the physiology that's going on to be able to get rid of that excess water that quickly. All right, and other animals, of course, then are carnivorous and can eat things, but you think about what those teeth-like structures are, and if you've taken Jim Krupa's evolution course, he might have shown you different teeth structure. Can pretty much give you the idea of molars and incisors for tearing or crushing food. Grinding food like a cow with molars, you can tell what kind of substances they probably would eat then as a diet. Even these crustaceans are quite amazing. One claw, like in a lobster, one claw has big crusher-like teeth, like molars, to crush mussels, like those barnacles out in the ocean. And the other claw, they're asymmetric, has very fine teeth, like our incisors in our front of our mouth, and those tear. So we got crushers and cutters, even in a lobster. The asymmetry is quite amazing. They have different physiological function. This muscle is a slow-type muscle in the crusher, and the muscle and the cutter that cuts the tissue is actually a fast-type. Isn't that amazing? So the same, you know, you might think they're the same, but they have different physiological roles in cutting and crushing. And of course, you know different animals that can swallow, like the snake that can enlarge or change the joint hinge in the mouth and actually eat large animals. And something interesting you've probably seen on PBS, you know, the way they catch some big boa constrictors, they'll put these little posts around in a circle with a small gap between it, and they throw like a little baby pig in the middle so the pig can't get out through the cracks, but then the snake, like a boa, can get in, will eat the pig, and it's actually the snake is now trapped in there until it digests the little pig. But people can catch these big snakes like this because they know how long it would take if it ate the pig, how long it's going to take before it could actually get out of the animal. So people can catch these large snakes this way. So this is what I was talking about, molar teeth for crushing and grinding, and premolars versus canines for biting, or incisors, you know, tearing and ripping teeth. And as you know, beaks of animals, like for the birds, are different for what they eat. So pretty neat general ideas. So the general idea here with digestion, the longer you need, if it's low quality food, you need a longer time in it to digest it. If it's a high quality food, then you don't need it so long in your GI tract. people know now different types of food actually increase your susceptibility to cancer. The longer the food stays in your GI tract, and some diets that they've looked at actually increases your rate of colon cancer. So food of high quality that goes through and doesn't sit in your GI tract, maybe less waste products, then your likelihood of colon cancer goes down. At least there's some correlation. I don't know all the details, but that's kind of a general idea. All right, so you can imagine some animals with very high metabolic rate, like a mammals, for this little kangaroo rat, a large surface area to small volume rate, it needs to eat quite quickly. It's small body mass, you know, so transient time is relatively short because it has to keep eating to maintain its thermoregulation, whereas larger animals don't have to eat as long. I mean, they've got this low-quality food, but they're heavy, and once they eat, they can store that food for a long time and digest it, ferment it, regurgitate it, chew it again, get the nutrients out. So it's kind of interesting. These are called fermenters, cows with the four stomachs, because they actually ferment the food and then break it down more. It helps them break down that grass. Just an idea, too, in heterotherms, you have to think about body temperature. The colder it is, it takes longer to metabolize. The warmer it is, the faster it can metabolize, because it's a heterothermic animal, right? It's responsive to the environmental temperature. So the general idea in any animal for these digestive processes is first getting the food in the mouth, right? Some of this digestion occurs right there because you're chewing it as part of breaking it down. The saliva has enzymes in it, so you're already having a digestive process. But usually then it goes into some region called like the stomach, in this case the midgut, the stomach. And in the stomach region is where you have these acidic secretions. And why is it acidic? Because it can break down the substances you're eating. And this acidic of a pH 1 or 2 can break down proteins and break them into smaller groups like amino acids. And then you don't want this acidic environment next to your epithelial cells that you're going to have to get nutrients into your body, because you'd be destroying your own GI tract, right? So now you have to neutralize this acidic environment so then you can get the nutrients to go next to the cells. So the idea is now you want a basic secretions to neutralize that acid, so now you can get this nice neutralized solution that can go against the epithelial cells without degrading the epithelial cells, so you can have absorption of glucose, sodium, water, and you know, all the nutrients that you need, all those amino acids. So the idea is to take that acidic environment, neutralize it, so you can now have little fingers here on those cells, those microvilli, that then can increase the surface area and get food across and the waste products out. Right, so that's the idea. You can see the different kinds of GI tracts in different animals. I don't want to really go through it. We've talked about Malpighian tubules already for water balance in an insect, for example. Here's gastric cecae. Here's like a crop. Some animals actually can store stones that you heard of, like with birds, for example, in this crop, and how it increases the grinding action on food. All the different kind of GI tracts here. It's kind of interesting. If you look at this rabbit, it's an interesting one. For example, you see the esophagus, the stomach, the intestines, and then what you see right here where the small intestine joins the large intestine, look at this big thing. This is the cecum. This right here, this is the cecum. This is basically the appendix. So in some animals, like in a human, the appendix is very small. Little thing right here. It's also called the cecum. It's very small, but it can cause you appendicitis, right? If it gets inflamed and packed in with some kind of poop and then explodes, and you get a septicemia because the bacteria gets out into your bloodstream. But that cecum in us is very small, but in some animals, like this rabbit, look at this thing, it's gigantic. Well, they now know that the cecum, or the appendix, can actually aid in some immune responses as well. But in us, it's pretty small and not as large as it is in some other animals. What's interesting about the whole GI tract, if you think of it in humans, look at it. It's one big tube, right? One big tube, large intestine, and out. But what comes off that tube are these other structures like the liver and the gallbladder, the pancreas, and these all dump solutions into it. The liver, we know from bile, the breakdown of red blood cells and things like that. And waste products get into the liver, and those get dumped out into the GI tract. The gallbladder, this baked products of waste products can make bile salts. Bile salts can be stored in the gallbladder, and there's muscles around the gallbladder, so when those contract, they can push that solution into the small intestine and help emulsify fat. That's the bile salts break up the fat in your food. So if you have a fatty diet, you'll actually increase the contractions of your gallbladder and get more salts to be released. It's kind of interesting how well that's detected. The pancreas, what does the pancreas release? You know, alpha cells, beta cells, right? So alpha cells, glucagon, insulin, and not into the GI tract, into the bloodstream. But the pancreas can also make pancreatic juices. These are usually basic juices. They can make a very alkaline solution. Alkaline solution that helps neutralize that acidic solution from the stomach that comes in the small intestine. So now the pancreas dumps out this basic alkaline solution, neutralizes the acid, so you can have absorption in the GI tract without eating up the intestinal lining. All right, so that's the main points there. What's interesting is inside the stomach, a monogastric means like us versus ones that have multiple stomachs like a cow. The main things to think about is the esophagus comes into the stomach and then into the small intestine, or the duodenum, first part of the small intestine is the duodenum. These are not true valves. They're kind of like sphincters that can keep food from not going back up. But you know what happens if you get sick and you vomit, right? So the food comes right back up. The problem is this epithelial lining in here can be damaged by this acidic environment. So you might hear of people with a gastric regurgitation or acid reflux. What they mean is that this acid environment is coming up into their esophagus, and they feel that burning sensation because that acid is burning the epithelial lining in here. What's interesting is this can, over time, damage these cells. In people with acid reflux repetitively, this can become cancerous because of the damaging tissue repetitively. So acid reflux is something to control because repetitive damage or scarring of this tissue can make this more likely to develop cancer. So this is why it's important not to have that acid reflux keep going on for long periods of time. And then when you need to dump out the food after a certain amount has been degraded by the acid in here, goes into the duodenum, then in the small intestine you get that basic environment, then absorption. What's interesting is in the stomach lining you have these little pits, and these gastric pits have specialized cells. And these specialized cells, you have to know, and these specialized cells have names like goblet cells, parietal cells, chief cells. Now, how to remember what these different cells do? If this is an acidic environment, what do you want? You want protection of the epithelial lining. How do you do that? Make a mucus secretion. What cells do that? The goblet cells. So think of a goblet, you know, like something you would hold and drink out of. The goblet cells are making the mucus that comes out here and protects the lining. The parietal cells, maybe like parents, right? They secrete acid. They secrete the hydrochloric acid. Wow, that can be really, you know, toxic, right? Damaging. But the goblet cells are making that mucus to make a nice mucus lining so the acid won't hit these cells. Now, chief cells can make a peptide called, let's go to it. So chief cells, oh God, is it not in here? No, I thought I had it in here. Oh, here it is. We'll just do it while we're here. Chief cells can make this pepsinogen. Pepsinogen is an inactive form of an enzyme. But in the presence of HCl, which the parietal cells have released, it converts the pepsinogen into pepsin. And the pepsin is the active enzyme that breaks down proteins into peptides. So how to remember all this? The goblet cells appear secrete mucus. The parietal cells make HCl, like maybe a parent you can think of, HCl, toxic, acidic, right? Chief cells make pepsinogen. How to remember this? Think of a chief of a tribe drinking a Pepsi, for example, okay? Chief of the tribe drinking a Pepsi. So that makes pepsinogen. It's inactive. It's kind of like this angiotensinogen or angiotensin 1, and it needs some ability to make it into an active form. So in this case, it's not an enzyme, it's just HCl that turns pepsinogen into pepsin. Now that's the active form. and it can then start to break down proteins. So goblet cells, parietal cells, chief cells. Chief, drinking a Pepsi, pepsinogen. Parietal cells, the HDL, converting it to pepsin. Goblet cells make the mucus. All right, let's go back to that figure again now. Okay, there we are. And rumnic animals, like a cow, it has different stomachs, these four different stomachs. What to remember, basically, I don't want you to have to really memorize all the different regions of the stomach, is the four stomach is this first place for fermentation. It's going on in here, and it's actually regurgitating the food. It can digest it in here, regurgitate it, come back in, and then it goes into the end of the stomach, and then that can be broken down further by fermentation. So sorry, this is the fermentation part, and then it goes back and goes down the GI tract into the small intestine. So this place is kind of a storage space, and then can be chewed up, regurgitated. You talk about a cow regurgitating its cud. That's what's happening here. So it's helping to break it down so it can eat it a little bit better. Now let me make sure what I just said here. Yeah, so the first part of this stomach is the fermentation, that's true. Fermentation and digestion. That's where a lot of bacteria is stored as well and helps to break it all down. Fermentation. Right. These two regions, fermentation. So this is fermentation, reticulum and rumen. Sorry. Okay, so all the GI tracts, when you get down into the small intestine, what do you want? You want absorption, right? Not reabsorption. It's kind of the first time. You might get some reabsorption based on the fluids that were dumped out, but you know, a lot of absorption. So what do you got to do? You got to increase the surface area heavily. So a lot of little foldings. But not only that, you need a good blood supply, right? And you also need this to contract to keep fluid going down. So muscles for peristalsis and a blood supply to take away the nutrients. And then you need a big surface area that that nice neutralized solution can hit. And what's really amazing is that the surface area is so increased because of all the foldings. But if you look at one of these villi, look at one of those villi, now you see these various cells in the villi. And the blood supply that goes through here, but now take one of those cells and look at one cell right at the top, all their little fingers. So now you've multiplied the surface area tremendously, a single cell with much larger surface area, right there. And then these folds, which has increased tremendously the surface area as well. So that's kind of neat to think about. And then capillary beds, goblet cells again for mucus, surface areas of reabsorption can occur and or absorption. Get that right on into the fluid. You see the structure of this central lateral, that's like the lymph system for the GI tract. Okay, and now we talk about, you know, there's different glands that can dump substances into the system, like the liver, our mucus glands, right? That's the main point. Muscles to help with peristalsis. You can actually record these kind of contractions, and they occur in different rates across the stomach, the small intestine, large intestine. And if you ever listen with a stethoscope in someone's stomach, you should hear a gurgling sound every so often that tells you that the system's working. Now, for these controls of these muscles, you have neurons that innervate these. And what kind of muscles are these? Smooth muscles. So remember, you have unitary and multi-unit or smooth muscle cells. But what's really interesting is they have like a little nerve network in here. And this nerve network is very important because you can have sympathetic innervation onto these nerves that control these smooth muscles to contract or relax, basically no stimulation. You have vagal nerves, parasympathetic, right? Cholinergic, right onto it. And so they can regulate these as well. And they could release substances, endocrine substances, into the bloodstream, depending on the needs for these tissues. So the main idea is that these walls of muscle have a ganglion, a nerve network in there that can be controlled by the sympathetic or parasympathetic system to either relax, promote digestion, or maybe to shunt blood flow away from this as well, or increase substances to be released. Okay, so I don't want you to have to memorize all these parts, but the parasympathetic enhances muscle contraction and peristalsis, right? So acetylcholine released here promotes it. Epinephrine stops it. So when you're all worked up and all nervous and you have a sympathetic response, you're not really developing much for digestion process. That's why it's good to relax, let your food digest. Don't get all stressed out because you won't be able to digest your food well. And if relaxed state, acetylcholine would be released, and you could then digest your food with multiple contractions. All right, and different rates. This big stomach doesn't need to contract that often. Where the small intestine, you have a lot of absorption going on. You need this peristalsis often to then get the food moving. And the colon's kind of storaging this, packing it up for release later on, right? A little bit about saliva. Saliva is really important in your mouth. You have amylase. This is the beginning of digestion, occurs in your mouth with enzymes that are released. You can release quite a bit of saliva, as you know. If you get sick right before you vomit, for example, your mouth fills up with a lot of saliva to protect your mouth from that acid that's about to come up from your stomach for vomiting. So how all that works is pretty amazing, too. Emesis, vomiting. You know, to get your stomach to contract, before that happens, you secrete all this mucus into your mouth, so you know you're going to vomit in a few seconds, probably. But pretty neat how that's all controlled. You don't have to know all this about the saliva, but do know that, you know, you have enzymes in your saliva. It starts to the digestive process. You can have ions in there as well. But this, then, you can reabsorb in your GI tract. So some of this to remember is that the pH in your saliva, you know, isn't too acidic, but when it gets in the stomach, boom, with that HDL, it's really acidic. Back the pancreatic juices and the bile that's released into the small intestine neutralizes that region. So the duodenum is the first part of the small intestine, and jejunum, ileum, cecum, colon, out. What's happening in these different regions? Saliva, salivary glands, gastric juices, we talked about that, goblet cells, parietal cells, chief cells, pancreatic juices, pancreatic bicarb, alkaline solutions, gallbladder bile salts, and this small intestine throughout is called the succus entericus, but mostly mucus and fluid coming out. The different enzymes that go on in these different regions break down different parts of the food, like amylase we talked about in the saliva, pepsinogen, HCL, but what's also interesting, we'll come back to, is this intrinsic factor that comes out of the stomach. Very important for vitamin absorption, like B12s. So we'll come back to this vitamin. It's also released from the stomach cells. And then you get into pancreas, and these pancreatic juices, lots of enzymes. Bile is basically bile salts, which helps to emulsify fat that comes into the small intestine. And then in the rest of the small intestine, you have other enzymes that break down products. You don't have to know every one of these, but other enzymes that then break down different groups to then help with absorption. Okay, where are we going to stop here? Maybe with this table, because you can see these different enzymes and kind of what they do in general. We just kind of the general points here, right? Glycogen, we've mentioned this way back, long time ago. You got to break down glycogen into glucose units so you can actually then utilize the glucose and absorb it, because you're not going to absorb these big molecules like starch or glycogen. All right, and then we will begin next time on Tuesday with table 15.2. Okay, so this is where we're going to stop now, and then we'll begin here next time.